Hey Haunters, this is Philip from the Haunted Attraction Network, and I just wanted to explain what's going to be happening before we get to the episode here. The mission of the Haunted Attraction Network is to help haunters achieve more through education, inspiration, and information. And sometimes this mission demands that we reach out to other community members who do what we can't. And in the next few months, we're going to be partnering with other content producers to enhance your experience with us on the network. So we're announcing that Hauntopic Radio and Frequent Fear are going to be joining us. So what does this mean? Well, it means that these two shows will now be available in our app, and they'll be on our main network feed. So if you're subscribed to our network feed and you're listening to me right now, that's why it's not going to be one of our regular shows. It's going to be one of these two shows coming on. So if you're subscribed to any of our app or our main feed or et cetera, you're going to get these two podcasts in addition to ours. They're not produced by us. Hauntopic Radio and Frequent Fear are their own things, but they're going to be in our feed. So what can you do next? You can make sure that you have a subscription to one of our free apps for Apple or for Android, or you can make sure you're on our main feed or check out our website to hear more from their shows. Brian and Daryl from Hauntopic Radio embody the mission that we do, and it's a great joy to have them on network. And Frequent Fear Podcast, while they're a little new to the industry, they really focus on raw and unedited conversations that aim at the true haunter. So without further delay, enjoy.
Welcome to the Frequent Fear Podcast with your hosts, Lee Conway and Lee Malibu.
Welcome everybody to this episode of the Frequent Fear Podcast, brought to you by our partners Nightmarish Conjurings. Check out them on their website at nightmarishconjurings.com for all your horror and scare needs. In this episode, first of all, I'd like to welcome Nick Hudson to the team.
Welcome. Hello. Hello, thank you. It's nice to be here. I knew I wouldn't be able to stay away.
Yes, I know we wouldn't let you stay away. So for his first interview with us, we're going to interview a guy called Dominic McChesney, who works for Sudden Impact Entertainment Company. He's got a great story about his time within the scare attraction haunt industry. So,
you're listening to Frequent Fear.
Welcome, Dominic.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
Oh no, we've been wanting you for ages.
I'm a big fan. I've been enjoying listening to the podcast immensely.
Awesome. So we generally start with the first question we ask all our guests is, how did you get into this industry? As a child, were you into like films, scare horror films, or?
This will be interesting, won't it, Dom?
Yeah, it will be interesting. I think I probably differ from a lot of the people that you've interviewed. I hate horror. I hate horror. I hate horror films.
Good night, everybody.
good night. And I was a big scaredy cat child and would never watch anything horror. The only thing I would get slightly intrigued by it, but I was always far too scared to watch anything. and if I would have nightmares at the drop of a hat. I remember. I'm trying to think of the I can remember things that scared me as a child, but I would never actually hub them out. So this is a really strange thing, which is that I remember being terrified, as many people were, by Doctor Who. Mm. And in the house that I grew up in, we had this a very long hall. No, a really long hall that ran down the center of the house, and the lounge was in the center of the hall. So in order to get one, from one end of the house to the other, you had to just go down this enormous long corridor. Probably wasn't that long. It just felt like it for me as a child. So, but my brothers used to watch Doctor Who, and I was terrified of even the music. So I used to put my fingers in my ears and just run down the corridor whenever Doctor Who was playing, or, you know, ran out of the room as soon as Basil Brush had finished. The funny thing was,
a lot of American audiences are now thinking, what?
Well, I think yeah. it's become quite famous over there now.
Doctor Who has, but Basil Brush.
Oh, Basil Brush.
Look that one up, children. Boom, boom.
He made a comeback. The funny thing was, the only time I could ever watch Doctor Who as a child and not be scared was the Daleks.
Yes.
And they didn't frighten me at all. And I know that everyone always used to go, oh, the Daleks are terrifying. I was like, no, it's just the horrible slimy creatures used to scare the living hell out of me.
The bad but special effects.
Yeah, but I never liked horror as a child. I wasn't interested in it. I didn't enjoy it. And actually, the weird thing is as an adult, I don't like horror. I never go and see a horror film out of my own choice. I've been bullied to go and see some of them.
What's interesting, Dom, is that you worked at the theatre where the greatest horror play of all time is still playing, didn't you?
Yes, indeed. Woman in Black. Now, that was when that was the first time I really came across scare as an entertainment form properly, because I think that was before we really had scare attractions here. Although I remember a few things in fun fairs and things, like walkthrough attractions that my brother would go in, but I would always kind of stand outside petrified, or, you know, I'd burst into tears at the drop of a hat.
When did the Woman in Black go into the Fortune Theatre, where you were an usher?
I was an usher, I think that was 1991, I believe. Or 1990 or 1991, I believe. So, because, yes, it was... I didn't watch my first horror film until I was 19.
And what was it?
It was... well, everyone's going to go, that's not a horror. But for me, it was. The Lost Boys. And the funny thing was... Well, the funny thing was, is because the vampires were attractive in it, I wasn't scared. So,
a bit like me in scare mazes when the female vampires come out.
Oh, yes. but I also, and then after that, I remember my friend said, right, you're going to watch American Werewolf in London. And I was like, really? And she was like, it's a comedy. So I kind of sat there and going, this is not a comedy. So now I've since seen it, and I do occasionally watch horror films now, and I like old-fashioned black and white ghost stories and old horror and classic horror. And then I like visiting things in retrospect, but I would never go and choose a horror thing out of my own choice, which is a bit odd.
What about things like the Rocky Horror Show and Little Shop of Horrors and that kind of...
Well, they're fine because they're not really horrors. They've just got horror in the title, so they wouldn't. You know, it was. I didn't like gore, and I warned you, Lee. I said that it was to be a bit different.
Yeah,
but I prefer really. If I'm going to look at horror now, I mean, certainly as a kid, I would have been. Yeah, scared. So I probably saw the first thing. I was 19. Rocky Horror was fine. Little Shop of Horrors was fine because they were musicals and I kind of embraced them, and because they're not really horror films. And I've since seen things that I was frightened of when I was younger, and I've been like, oh, that's not scary now. But I think that's just the way that, you know, things have gone nowadays with. You know, we're more resilient to violence and horror to a certain extent, and the special effects and things. And probably because I've worked in the business and I've been helping people fix a hanging eyeball out of their socket, or, you know, help them put makeup on where half their face has been slashed to pieces.
But you're a big fan of, you say you don't like gore, but you're a big fan of murder mysteries and Agatha Christie. And over the Christmas period, we had a big... 3-hour version of the classic murder mystery, and then there were none, which is quite gory and scary.
Yeah, that is very true. Yes, I mean, it's really the mixture of I should say that my murder mysteries are all very, the things I love are very classic, you know, it's all kind of, you know, old ladies sitting in cottages with knitting needles and things like that. So I
stuck
do
in their
like
necks.
That. And I mean, I've argued that And Then There Were None is before. I've argued that And Then There Were None is actually the original slasher movie. It is, you know, it is absolutely, I believe, the one of the bases for you know, Friday the 13th, Scream, certainly. I mean, I love Scream because it's a murder mystery. So, but it's when it's mixed with supernatural, I don't particularly like it. And I don't like things like Saw, because even though we have done an attraction based on Saw, which was very good, and we've done, you know, a lot of gore and stuff like that in our attractions, but it's not my reason for being involved in this business. It's not what drives me at all. The horror aspect is not the area that interests me.
It's secondary, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. It's just a device that is, and it is partly just come from it. Now there is kind of a level of horror I do like. I like the Hellraiser films. I think they're very clever, but I like a good story. If it's just gore for gore's sake, then I kind of switch off. But I think Hellraiser is brilliant. I think it's very, very clever, very well written. I read the books, or read the book, the original novella, and then and other Clive Barker books. And I think he really does create a brilliant world.
You were saying regarding like going to fairs. Did you go on ghost trains? Or I mean, as Nick knows, I was terrified of ghost trains. Up to probably being about 35 or 40, and I had to be dragged on the one at Blackpool by my daughter by that time. But when she was probably 7.
Come on, Daddy!
I remember going to one in Dawlish in Devon once with a friend, and I kept my eyes shut all the way around it. And there was a bit when, and I don't know whether it was someone dressed in a scary, you know, in a skeleton suit or something, but suddenly I remember this thing touching my head and going, and screaming my head off. And then going, I remember going, oh, I went on the very old one, the original ghost train on Brighton Pier.
Right.
Which was, this was when it's now Horatio's Bar, so this was like the really old 1930s one. Sadly, it's gone now. But I remember going on that and keeping my eyes closed throughout the whole thing and being really aware of noises. So I was just a big scaredy cat, really. So it's kind of funny.
So what is your background? What did you do after school?
Well, I went to drama school. And I trained at the Academy of Live and Recorded Arts.
I came home and watched television. After school, yeah.
Well, yes.
It was just not funny, Nick. That's why we didn't laugh.
Yeah. Well, it took me a while to get it.
That's actually what I thought you meant. I thought, what did you do after school? Well, I came home and watched horror films, you know.
I did like they used to watch the Basil Rathbone's Sherlock Holmes and... They used to scare me a bit. That just proves what a big scaredy cat I was. So
you can say Basil Brush then for a second.
No, not Basil Brush. Boom, boom. I went to drama school, and then the first professional job I had from drama school, funny enough, was working at Chessington World of Adventures as part of the entertainments team. And we used to do walkabout strange characters, and I used to do like a comedy posh double act and an old woman, things like that. And that was really good fun, which is where I first met Jason Carl from Atmosphere Productions. So we worked together because he came to work and be part of the entertainment team there when he was kind of starting out. So he used to play a Dracula in Transylvania. And I remember once in the entrance to... So this would have been my first experience of doing scaring myself. I remember in the entrance to the vampire ride, there's that little tunnel.
Yeah.
And I remember once dressing up in a bride's gown in full bride, demon, devil bride with a bouquet of flowers with this, with a veil over my face and standing in there and just literally doing a statue jump. So yeah. I would stand still and people would come through and think I was a model, and then I would jump forward. Which, funnily enough, you've just reminded me, but this has linked back to the thing that I remember seeing as a kid, and it's scaring me. So this does link back, which is I remember the very old film of Jack the Giant Killer with the models by Ray, what was his name? Ray Harryhausen. I've got to look up his name. Ray, who did, you know, Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger. Remember that?
See, I don't know his name, but I know.
Yeah, he did a film called Jack the Giant Killer. Ray Harryhausen. Okay, so Ray Harryhausen. And he did all the models. He did King Kong. And in Jack the Giant Killer, there's a scene on a boat where the heroine gets locked in this room or locked in this cabin, and walking towards her is this skeleton bride holding this dead bouquet of flowers. I remember this absolutely terrified the living daylights out of me. So what do you do when you're older and you're working in the theme park and you've got access to a bridal dress? You recreate that moment. So, so I remember getting into this bride's dress and standing in the vampire's tunnel as people entered and scaring the crap out of them, people, and thinking, oh, this is good fun. So, you know, we used to do that quite often.
Was that at the same time they had the live actor playing the vampire?
Yes, which was Jason Carl.
Oh, okay.
That was Jason Carl.
Because that scared me as a child.
He's going to be very pleased, I'm telling everyone this. I'm sure he's buried this deep down. Sorry, Jason, if you're listening. you probably came through, Nick.
I did. I remember Jason Carl strokes my mother's neck.
Oh, really?
Yes. but that was such a good ride as a kind of early version of what a very lavish gothic haunt area could be, and the fact that you were doing jump scares is a great introduction for people for scare mazes.
Yes, indeed. I've always been interested by, because I'm, you know, obviously this is kind of going off into a site, but I've heard this term jump scares a lot, and working in the business for over 13 years, like, it's only suddenly cropped up, and I've been going, I keep on thinking, well, what is that? What's a jump scare, and what's the opposite of it? And, I mean, it's. I suppose I've been looking at that, but I've noticed that people are using this term jump scares a lot. I mean, I assume they mean that you're scared by somebody jumping out at you.
Well, to give an example, Dom and I were at the theatre last week, and we were seeing a show called Matilda, and the second act started, and the woman in front of Dominic would not shut up. So she received a jump scare, you could say, couldn't you, Dom?
and yes, actually, that was where my whole technique of my training came in to play, and also probably my director, my angry director mode went kicking in. So I launched myself without any warning to Nick, or in fact the woman sat next to Nick either, launched myself at these people who were in the row in front of us. And I, looking back, I mean, it's quite funny now, because I'm actually thinking, oh my God, I really did. I scared her.
She was an elderly woman.
Well, the one I was aiming it for was her daughter.
Oh, yes, but I felt sorry for the woman in her 60s who jumped about 5 feet in the air.
Yeah, well, she was guilty too. So, I mean, I'm not, you know. So, but I actually, but the funny thing is that I suppose because I've done so much training and learning to get very close to people without touching them, and because I, you know, that's what I do. I train people to scare. I realize now I used all my technique in this 10-second moment of telling this woman to shut the hell up. And I launched myself, grabbed the back of her seat and pushed my face into hers without touching anyone. I just went, it has started, you know, in a very angry voice. And then I sat back and I was kind of trembling. And then I thought, do you know, that was actually really bad, because I actually did a full scare, level 10. Anyway.
It's quite interesting, something that you've just mentioned, and I suppose we sort of going all over the place, but you just sort of mentioned about sort of the not touching. Obviously, a lot of attractions these days have gone away from that and gone towards, you know, actual physical touching. In numerous different levels, of course. What is your sort of views on that?
Well, I should start by saying I have never been through an attraction where I've been told that they will purposely touch us. So I've never been to Thorpe Park's Friday Nights, where I know they do it there. So yeah.
Or subspecies, thank you, Dom.
Oh, do they do it in subspecies as well?
I didn't know that.
I'm sorry, Nick.
It's all right.
It's great music. my personal view, it's not something that we do in Sudden Impact. We work with a lot of big IPs. We have relationships with studios, so we're having to be very, very careful on because we are guardians of the properties. And we've also got an international reputation. I have heard people arguing that touching does work in this and it does work in that. I haven't experienced it myself, like I said, properly. I have been in attractions where they touch me, but not because they're told to or they're meant to. Personally, I don't like it. I think it's a... This is only my personal opinion, but I think it's a cheap scare. Mm. It's very, very, very easy to scare someone if you're going to grab them. It's also extremely dangerous. I mean, one of the reasons we are so successful in our field in Sudden Impact is we have a very, very low rate of actors and audience
deaths.
Incidents. You know, last year we did our horror Halloween event in Kuala Lumpur, and we didn't have one incident for the whole run. And I know that other places have huge amounts of incidents, but I mean, you know, we do train our actors. We put them through a week's training, and if an actor does apply themselves to that training and listens to what we're saying and actually uses what we teach them, then they don't have problems with the audience and the audience don't have problems with them. I can guarantee that 99.9% of the time when we've had an incident in one of our attractions, it's because the actor's not doing because what they were told to do.
Yeah.
And I can hand on heart say that I've probably been touched or hit maybe 3 or 4 times in, you know, 15 years, and all 3 times that they were my fault. It was my fault because I misjudged the situation. I misjudged the distance. I tried to be clever, or I tried to get someone who was an idiot. And, you know, if the problem is when you're an actor in one of these attractions, you get very... I've gone off topic a little bit, but I hope that's okay. But I think when you're an actor, and I have been an actor in these attractions, so I'm speaking it, but I know from personal experience. So when I'm training the actors, you know, I'm saying this is not something I'm telling you to do that I don't know. I know this because I've worked in them for so long and I studied it and I know the psychology of it. So sometimes you become very proud as an actor. Certainly if you've been part of something being set up, be it a huge branded IP like something we've done like Tomb Raider or Saw or
Ghostbusters
or Van Helsing, you become, you know, when you're building up to the opening, it doesn't have to be a big brand, you know, any show, and I'm sure Lee, you've had this as well, that when you're creating it, it's your baby, you've become very, very proud, so you want everyone who comes through it to enjoy it to the absolute maximum. So you want them to have a good time. You don't. And so when you're an actor working in this, so you're working a long shift. You know, sometimes actors can be in these attractions for, you know, 8 hours or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they may be in one position. They may be doing the same scare every 30 seconds for, you know, several hours minus their breaks or whatever. So, you know, when you get someone who reacts in a particularly negative way, sometimes you get riled up. Now, sometimes, you know, we say to
the actors when we're training them. We say, you know, one day it's going to be like water off a duck's back. It's not going to bother you. But then another day you'll hear something that someone else will have said, like, and you've heard it a million times. And one day it really gets into you and you're just like, how dare you? I want you to enjoy this. And what happens is the actor gets very proud, and so they try to prove that they are better than this idiot that's going through. And now the right thing to do is just let that idiot go. If they go through and they say it's crap, then fine. It's their loss. But which is the simple and the easiest way to do, which is what we always try to get people to recognize. But sometimes that's very difficult to do as a performer. And, you know, I've definitely had someone come through and they've made some sort of smart ass comment. And I've been like, no, I want you to be scared. I'm gonna be extra careful, and I'm gonna rearrange my scare and change it up in order to get you. And then what happens is you end up running into a wall. So, you know, so a lot of the incidences that I come across is when, you know, the actor gets kind of wound up because of their pride, which is quite justified. But the difficult thing is, I think, for an actor is when they're working in these attractions is learning to identify, you know, when, because I mean, learning to scare is actually a huge part of that is actually learning when not to scare. It's funny because I've noticed that actors who work with us, we're very lucky that we have returning actors, and I'm sure you have this as well, Lee, is that when actors return, sometimes when they're veterans, they have a little bit more scare stamina.
Yeah.
And they don't get wound up as much.
Mm.
Whereas a new actor will tend to, you know, will see all that and will have to go through all that psychology, if you know, and so they will have to, you know, they'll have to learn about how audiences are and how to judge a group and how to be able to get the best scare from this side or that side. And but, you know, I've noticed that veterans who return to our attractions, we have a lot who worked with us, you know, several times every time we return to certain theme parks, is that they become a lot more resilient and they don't get wound up at all. So, you know, it's very nice to see, you know, when I see there's some actors that I love working with again and again, because I just know that there's going to be no problems. It's so easy. They'll be able to scare. They won't get tired. They won't wander off out of their position. They'll be able to do the same scare for 8 hours and not complain. They'll try and change it or climb up a pillar and jump down from 15 feet off the air, so in front of a wheelchair. and, you know, I think that's really heartening when you see people who have learned it and bring it back, and they learned what they've learned last year and then they kind of brought it back a second time. Sorry, I'm rambling in a really weird direction. I'm sorry, all over the place.
So how did you get into the industry?
Simply, I went to work at Terror in the Towers as an actor.
Right.
For the very first year of Terror in the Towers at Alton Towers, I saw it advertised in the Stage, and I thought, oh, that looks like it's fun. So I...
Which is like our version of Variety, we must say.
Yes, indeed. So I went off to Alton Towers and I auditioned for Linton Harris. And
Had you done Chessington at this point, Dom?
Yes. Chessington was years before. I've been working. Chessington was in 1994, 1995, and 1996, I think. So I've been out of that and working as an actor in different places and dancing in musicals and performing stuff.
So theme parks weren't unfamiliar to you?
No. I knew theme parks very well.
You found yourself back in the theme parks at Terror in the Towers.
I did indeed, yes. And I had a great time. I had a wonderful time. It was really... I was very lucky enough. I was in the Gothic Freezer at the end. And I was playing a jester. And I kind of look back now at that and I kind of wince at some of the corny scares and things I did. But, you know, that's what you learn when you're starting out. But I had a great time with that. And then when it finished, I went off and did a children's tour. And then I was aware that Linton was designing and creating Chamber Live for Madame Tussauds. But I missed the first cast of that. So when they were recasting, meanwhile, I'd sent him an email and said, you know, I really enjoyed working in... the scare attraction in Alton Towers, and I really would like to work with you again, and I would like to work in other countries, blah, blah, blah. And then he sent me an email and said, I'm recasting Chamber Live. Will you come and audition? So I did. So I went along and had another audition. I got into Chamber Live. So I worked there on the second cast of that. And then when that happened, he picked about six of us to go up to Warwick Castle for 10 days because Warwick Castle wanted to make the Ghost Tower into a live interactive attraction. Right. So there was about six, eight of us. We went up, and Two Swords put us up in the Hilton in Warwick. And we went along every day, and we devised the Warwick Ghost Tower. Right. And Linton obviously directed it, but we devised it there, the small group of us. And then we ran it for 10 days with just a smoke machine and some sound effects. And it was such a success for those 10 days. They asked us to run it for the rest of the summer. So we ran the Ghost Tower in Warwick Castle for the rest of the summer. And then while that was happening, Linton told me that he was doing Tomb Raider in Dreamworld, which is an Australian theme park on the Gold Coast, at Christmas time, their Christmas time. Same Christmas time as us, actually. Their summertime. So, and he asked me if I'd like to come out and be a manager on it. And I said yes. So I flew myself. I paid for my own way, and I flew off to Dreamworld, and I was the manager of Tomb Raider at Dreamworld for one summer, for about 3 months. And then I came back, and then that's when we opened Warwick Castle Ghosts Alive as a proper attraction. We built stuff meanwhile in it, and then that ran for many years. Mm-hmm. So so that's kind of how I started, and how I started with the company, really. So, and then I would do Ghost Tower during most of the summer months, and then in the winter I would go abroad back to Australia and do other shows. We did Tomb Raider in Perth as well, and then we did Prison Break Live, which was an attraction based on Prison Break, funnily enough. And then we did a couple of other ones. We did one called Nightmares, and then I did the big Philadelphia show, which was like in the sports stadium in Philadelphia, which was for Halloween. So that's kind of how it all started, really.
And your actual title is the very impressive Director of Attractions Worldwide, isn't it, Dom?
Yes, Director of Live Attractions Worldwide. Live attractions. I don't think we've got any unlive attractions, but...
dead attractions.
Dead attractions, yes.
So, I mean, like, you sort of just mentioned the one in Philadelphia.
Yes.
Obviously, there'll be quite a lot of people that don't know about that. What did it consist of? Was it like numerous mazes or attractions?
Back in 96 or 7, 8, I don't know, it's before I was working for the company. Linton, the very first show he did, horror show, was Madison Square Gardens, which was in New York and beneath Madison Square Garden. So pretty impressive stuff. The show in Philadelphia was at the Wachovia Stadium, which was this huge ice rink, the sports stadium. And we took it over for Halloween. It was called Nightmares, and it was 9 attractions in one building. It was a linear adventure, so you went through each attraction one by one, and then so you didn't go in and then choose which one you went to, like a lot of theme park horror nights.
Yeah.
And it took about, I think it took 90 minutes to go through the whole thing, and we employed 130 actors, so which was incredible. It was fantastic. We'd do scare school for a week with 130 actors, and then cast the mazes. It was all very exciting, and it was made into a TV special called Making of a Monster, where we took a news anchor. A news anchor? No, a news reporter, not the anchor. Yeah. The anchor's in the studio, isn't it? So, the news reporter, Nicole. We took her, and she did Scare School with us, and included, and also it also had what's his name? Butch Patrick. Okay, so we took a news reporter and we put her through Scare School, and we had guest stars as well, including Butch Patrick, who used to play Eddie Munster in the Munsters TV series. And we put her through Scare School and we taught her to be scary, and we did this. It was a 3-episode program, and we won an Emmy Award for it, which is pretty good going and pretty impressive. So we only found that out about 2 years ago, I think, that we'd won this Emmy. So, but this, it was a really fantastic show, and it ran for 3 years. But then they knocked the stadium down. And it was, we had a really fantastic cast over the years of actors, and some people who've come on and have, you know, gone on to some big things, and both from there and in Australia as well. We've had quite a few of our actors who've been in our mazes have become major stars on TV in Hollywood now. So
didn't you work with Hugh Jackman?
Linton did. I never met him. Hugh Jackman, yes. When we did Van Helsing at Madame Tussauds, Hugh Jackman did the soundscape for it. So Linton met him, and then he came through the attraction and said on film it was scarier than his movie.
Funny. So, I mean, the one in Philadelphia, would that have been your first introduction to, like, the American Halloween season? Did you know much about it? Obviously, we know Halloween as from growing up, but it's nothing like it was in America, so...
Yes.
Did you know about it before you went across to America, or did you, when you got there, was it such a surprise to see it so big?
I don't remember being particularly surprised by it. I think I was aware of what they did because this was 2006, 2007. So it was. I was certainly aware of how big it was in America, and after, you know, because I'd been with the company a few years then, I'd done quite a lot of research, and obviously I'd heard a lot of stories from Linton, and, you know, he knew people such as Leonard Pickle and other people in the haunt industry at that point. So when he'd started with Madison Scare Garden, now, because obviously we then chose to go into IPs and also year-round haunts. So I was aware of what Halloween was in the States. However, because that wasn't in our area, even though we were doing the Halloween gig, because we were, you know, we were hired by Comcast to create the Halloween show. Mm-hmm. So even though we were much more interested in creating year-round haunted attractions, whereas they didn't really exist apart from London Dungeon, really was the only one. So, you know, we were one of the first people to do that, and we, you know, introduced that to the Chamber Live, so that, which then became Scream, at Madame Tussauds, and then Warwick Castle. So, and because we were not interested so much in the horror, we were aiming for movie rights and movie products. So I was aware of what was happening. It wasn't so much of a shock when I got there and I saw the show, because I knew what it was, and we also had like two or three movie brands in the show. So people would be coming through and they would be going through our licensed Mummy attraction or Van Helsing, and also Prison Break. They were, you know, three big movie brands within the event. So, you know, I knew that Universal did that, of course. You know, Universal uses big brand IPs. But again, that's I'd never been to those, and I still haven't been to those.
Was there a difference in the audience reaction in America compared to England or anything like that?
No. I would say, obviously, when you're working at somewhere like Madame Tussauds, you're working for tourists anyway, so you're getting a lot of foreign guests. So you're getting people from all over the world. Now, people from different countries react in, like, you know, this over the years, they react in different ways. I wouldn't have said that there's any great difference. I hadn't noticed any big difference.
To twist the question around, what about the actors?
The actors are different, you mean? I would say not really, because they're all trained in the same way. So, because I would say that if there's any big difference between actors, I would say the Australians probably are more positive as performers. But with terms of performance and acting, I wouldn't have seen, there wasn't really much difference, because, you know, hopefully people are doing the same training, they're doing the same performance regardless of where they come from, as long as they've been taught the same thing or how to perform.
I mean, sorry. I would have thought that there would have, yes. I would have thought that one of the other things would have been is that I find it, and I suppose it's because we work within the industry on a daily basis, that it's really, really surprising when you put on an attraction and somebody goes, I've never heard of this stuff before. And it's like, hello? It's such a big thing in this country now. But there's hundreds of people that come through attractions and go, oh, I've never heard of, like, Scare Attractions. What is it? And so to go to America, and I would think that, you know, you're not going to get that because they've grown up with that, you know, they've grown up with
Scare, I see.
As we are growing up with it as now.
Right, I see. I understand. I understand what you're saying now. So, yes, I you would definitely get more crowds and more people coming to the show because they know what they're coming for in America. Yes, that's certainly it. But I think probably because I never worked in the haunt industry in England aside from Warwick Castle, Madame Tussauds, and the Halloween thing at Alton Towers. So I wasn't coming across people who were asking about the scare industry as such. Mm-hmm. Because I came from it, and this is the direction I come from it, is I come from it because of it being a theatrical performance.
Yeah.
And it's theatre, and that's what I'm into. I'm not into scaring people for just scaring people. It doesn't particularly appeal to me. It's just simply a device used in a particular theatrical environment. So, which I know there's going to be a lot of people who probably go, oh, no, that sounds wanky. But that's the area I come from. I don't come from it from any joy or interest of horror or scare. I come from it from a theatrical point of view because I love immersive theatrical experiences.
Do you find it difficult then? Like, as you said, that obviously you've worked with some really, really high quality IPs.
Yeah.
Bear in mind that, you know, some of the films you want, they're not your cup of tea. Do you find it hard then to sort of get yourself into a position where you can work with MIPs? As you say, you know, the Saw films, they're not your favourite films, but you've actually run an attraction through Saw.
Yes, well, in fact, Saw is the only one that I had to do that, because all the others are adventure films, really. I mean, Tomb Raider's not a horror film. The Mummies aren't really horror films. We did, Prison Break's not a horror film. Ghostbusters isn't really a horror film. I mean, it's comedy horror, but... I'm trying to think of Van Helsing. It's not really... that's more of an adventure as well. So a few years ago, we won... we created Maze Runner, which isn't a horror film. That's a kid's dystopian teen, adventure film. And in fact, all the scares in that were good guy scares, which we created the good guy scare for Tomb Raider, and we kind of like mastered it. And in fact, all the scares in that attraction were good guy scares, and it worked brilliant. And we were up for an award, and we were up against Harry Potter, Gringotts. We didn't win, obviously, because Gringotts won. But, you know, we got nominated. It was like we were one of the four nominees. So, the only film I had to watch was, I mean, I'd seen Saw 1 because someone had said it's a really good thriller, whodunit mystery. So I'd actually watched that and managed to get through it. I was like, fine. And I enjoyed Saw 1 because it's quite a clever film.
Mm.
Then Linton told me that we were doing Saw, and then he dragged me into the cinema to see Saw 2, and I just kind of sat there, like, looking through my fingers and squeamish and just hating every minute of it. We managed to create the Saw attraction without... He probably won't know this until he listens to this. We managed to create it. I didn't watch any one of the other Saw films. I read the synopsis on Wikipedia and blagged my way through it. So, but we created the Saw attraction, which probably is the most... That's probably one of our most extreme scare attractions we've ever done. And that's the one that I can remember standing outside and seeing teenage boys coming out in tears. Mm. And I was thinking, wow, that's pretty extreme to actually get that to that point. All without touching people.
Where was the Saw maze at?
That was at Movie World in on the Gold Coast.
Right.
So, we also did Freddy's Nightmares, which was based on the last remake of Freddy Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
And that was really good, and I really enjoyed blocking and directing that one. And I had to watch that film. So, but that was a really, really fun show to block. But my favorite one, which we did for Movie World, was Arkham Asylum, which was Batman's, you know, the Arkham Asylum, the Batman films, and we did that, and that was probably one of my favorite shows to direct. I thought it was fantastic, and it looked beautiful, and the costumes were astounding, and the actors were brilliant in it, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, sorry, I'm wandering off again.
No, but, I mean, you just mentioned earlier about the good guy scare.
Yeah.
Actually, who came up with the idea of going, no, let's not do the bad guy scares, let's do a good guy scare?
Well, no, what actually happened was we were doing Scare School for Tomb Raider. And when creating Tomb Raider, which was Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life, it was the second film, so it was based on that. We had to have several girls. We had to cast several girls according to specifications from Paramount, who said, you know, the girls have to be this tall, blah, 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 blah. So we had, I think, about five or six Lara Crofts. And we had things like we had one Lara Croft who was photo Lara Croft. So she could only be, she was the only one who could be photoed outside and for all the press events. Then we had host Lara Croft, then we had action Lara Croft. So we had all these Lara Crofts. And when we were doing the Scare School, the girls were doing, they're all doing it, everyone was doing it together. And we had, you know, some of the girls were playing monsters and zombies as well and dead adventurers and things. And the girls who were playing Lara came up and went, we want to scare. And Linton said, what? And he said, we want to scare. We're doing all this training. And it looks really good fun. And we don't want to just be doing, you know, photo ops and all the rest of it. We want to be in there scaring people. So what we did is we created a scare moment for Lara Croft. So apart from Lara Croft was always the host as well. So we created a scare for that moment. So when they come in to the first, we always have host rooms, which I think they're very similar to the Skeleton Key rooms, which Knott's Berry Farm do. And so we always have like a Skeleton Key room. It's something we kind of just always do because it helps with batching, because we like our groups to be very strict on our batching and operations. So, but then halfway through the attraction, we'd have a moment where you'd go around a corner and there'd be this huge section with all these pillars. So it's like entering a temple. And we created this moment with Lara Croft jumping out from behind the pillars and going, follow me, Tomb Raiders, and then running off down a corridor. And then she'd run through a gobo light scare. So she'd run through this light and disappear from everyone's view. And then she'd go around the corner through a fire escape and reset, ready for the next group. And meanwhile, the Nether actor would be positioned in the gobo light scare to get that scare, so the audience would get this double scare. But I remember this one point, and it was Noelle who was playing Lara that one day, and she jumped out from behind this pillar and she went, this way, Tomb Raiders, follow me! And this woman went, oh, Lara. So it was very, very funny. Lara was laughing her head off. So that's how the good guy scare came about. And then we created the good guy scare for the, you know, when we redid The Mummy, we put a good guy scare in because, you know, we had Rick from The Mummy films, and then we did Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. So we'd have, like, you know, his Rick's wife and all the rest of it. And then, of course, with Maze Runner, you know, the only real monsters in it are the Grievers, which are just impossible to do unless you've got a huge budget to create a crazy costume. So we created the entire attraction as... you know, you're going through the maze, and it's all the Maze Runners themselves, all the kids who are jumping out and scaring people, and it worked really well. I was quite impressed by it, actually. I was quite surprised that it worked so well, but it did. So that's kind of the good guy scare, and then we even put scares into Ghostbusters.
Does that mean that the guests going through are the baddies? If you see what I mean.
No, it doesn't. No, not at all. The guests are always... I mean, you have to give them... No, not at all, because in Maze Runner, they weren't... The baddies were these monsters. So, yeah, no, it's not at all. It's just more surprise. So the good guy scare would be more... I mean, the great thing about a good guy scare is that what it does is it creates laughter, which I know that Linton, when he talked at ScareCon, he was, you know, explained to people that our biggest emotion that we have is laughter. It's not fear and screams, it's laughter, because people are enjoying it, and that's kind of what we're into. They're not laughing at it, they're laughing because of their reaction, because they're being manipulated by the attraction. So, you know, the great thing about a good guy scare is if you get one that really well set up, for instance, the another show that we did in Australia at Dreamworld was an attraction called Kevil Hill, which was our zombie town. It was like an entire 1950s town built in this tent. And the very first scare was that the group were collected by a cinema attendant. And the cinema attendant would take them down to the cinema, stand in front of the screen, and they'd watch, and then the cinema attendant would disappear. And then he would reappear, but in such a surprise that not only would he be getting the entire group, so it would be like a very orchestrated scare to get like 20 people all at the same time, and they all jump, and which is fantastic. But the thing is, because it's the same character, they've just seen who's been talking to them. They scream, and then they realize it's them, and then they just all laugh, and it's just such a great feeling to be able to manipulate the audience. And to hear them having so much good fun and enjoy themselves.
And the same thing happens in Ghostbusters, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, Ghostbusters. Yeah, exactly. They're taken upstairs for a briefing. And they have... one of the Ghostbusters is talking and is then interrupted in a surprise trick effect by the other Ghostbusters. And because the audience is... they're set up and they're standing in the right position and they're facing the right way and they just don't know what's going to happen. And that scare happens and it gets the entire group every single time. It's like when we created it, we were just so happy because we were like, oh my God, this is a slam dunk scare. You know, this works every single time.
And that's a jump incredible. Scare, Dom.
Yes. No. Oh, thank you, Nick. Thank you. Thank you for explaining that. That's good. Good to know. Technical term.
So, I mean, what do you prefer? Do you prefer like producing an attraction with an IP or with an original background story?
I don't know. I would tend to say with an IP, because, like I said, I'm not particularly into the scare as such. It's not something that appeals to me. So, you know, we've created some fantastic own brand stuff and some original stories. And last year,
Kevil Hill, for example.
Kevil Hill, yes, indeed, in Australia, and also in Malaysia, where we got a long running Scream Park there. We created Rumor Hantu, which is all based on Malay ghosts. So I did enjoy doing that research and things like that. And for this Halloween, we're meant to be doing a you know, people have really requested an Asian horror house, and Asian horror is pretty extreme stuff. So, yeah, I would tend to say that for me, I would rather go for creating an attraction based on an adventure, something like The Mummy or Arkham Asylum or you know, Maze Runner or Van Helsing. I love getting the style guide through from these studios and then having to create the scares and fit in and say, okay, right, we know this room's going to have this and this, and the scare device in that room is going to be this, and that's where the actor comes out. Then they go back and they reset, and or they can go around this corner and do the second scare or whatever. So I do love that intricacy of working with the IP.
But with Ghostbusters, we saw we could do an original story based on a pre-existing characters.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because and also because of the Ghostbusters, it was, you know, utilizing what we did with laser gun game. So, you know, we'd taken laser tag to that IP level. But yes, it agreed. And, you know, the Ghostbusters in Mexico is hopefully, you know, one of many. And we would love to see it go somewhere else, and we'll take it up to another level. And, you know, and who knows where we'll go with that. So. But yeah, we took the brand because we wanted to make something new, but we still had to be traditional, but we didn't want it to look dated. So so therefore we had to come up with a brand new storyline for that, but still be faithful to the original brand.
Yeah.
There's a few things that I don't like. I say things I don't like. And scare attractions. Because the funny thing is, even though I don't like horror, I can
I'm
go
a creepy
scary...
girl.
Oh, God. If I go through another scare attraction and I see someone dressed up as a little girl going, la, 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 I swear I will just...
Singing the Molly Crow theme.
There was a great composer. Someone wrote the music for that. That was really good. I don't know who it was.
Yeah.
Some hack. some musical hack. I've got to be careful. He's letting me stay tomorrow. Maybe. Sometime this week. I don't like that. I don't like chainsaws. I'm not scared by chainsaws. I'm not scared by clowns. I don't. So clowns, little girls, and chainsaws, which are like
Were you ever scared by them?
No, not really. I went to circuses and I liked clowns. Clowns were funny. They were fun.
You're weird.
I mean, I do understand where you're coming from, Dom, but I come down to the fact is that, you know, you go through... we were talking to Colin Reese from Scare Track and Scare Tour, and we were saying the same is that the fact is that unfortunately they hit the points that the general public like. So you find that most areas will have, if you go into a sort of anything that's got probably five or six mazes in it, one of the mazes will be a clown maze because that just ticks a box.
Yeah, it's true.
And one of the ones will have a chainsaw in it, and that's a box as well. Because it's, yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. Is that it's a little bit sort of it's been over egged and overdone, but the general public like it. It may be
I don't find zombies very scary. They're just a bit slow and stupid, really.
They're very easy to costume.
Oh. Yes. And it's,
that is the whole thing about zombies. That is why they are so prevalent in scare attractions. They are very easy to costume.
But the makeup is quite elaborate sometimes, if you're lucky.
Sometimes, yeah, there's some amazing stuff. No, I do know, even though I'm being a grumpy old man of scare here, saying, you know, little girls and chainsaws. And, you know, we use chainsaws. We had an attraction with three or four of them in last year. But, you know, it's... and we've used little girls in the past, and we've used clowns. So it's not, you know,
A little female girl clown with a chainsaw is Dom's ideal.
Now that would be interesting. That would be good. But I think the problem is it all comes down to the direction, because a lot of these places let the actors create or do. They put someone in a maze and they go, oh, do something. You know, you're going to look creepy, you'll be creepy. So what happens is if they don't direct the actors... then I'm going to sound a bit anal here, but if they don't direct the actors and the actors are left to their own devices, or they don't keep on, you know, making sure that the actors are not getting to the stage where they go, oh, I'm bored, I'm going to change it now. So, which happens a lot in every attraction, I'm sure. But, you know, if then, you know, because if we're putting someone dressed as a little girl in an attraction, you know, one of the things I will say to them is, don't do la 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 la. So you're not having a teddy bear, and you know, so it's and don't say, are you my mummy? Are you my daddy?
Or get out! Or what are you out. What are you doing in my house?
It's these platitudes and things that which usually they crop up. They usually crop up if the actors are not directed, or they're just kind of left to their own devices. This is my job. My job is when we're running an attraction or running an event, my job is to make sure that those sort of things are not happening and that the actors are sticking to the direction and making sure that they do their scare, and they do their scare exactly the same every single time, and then they reset, and they do the scare every single time is reset, and they do that for the entire thing.
Because you wouldn't expect an actor who's rehearsed for a TV shoot to just suddenly change what they were doing, would you?
No, exactly, and that's how we treat it. We treat it, and every scare in our mazes is blocked. Every single scare is blocked to the nth degree. So the actor does this, they do this, they made scare front, middle, and back, and they don't change up, and they don't go, oh, I'm only going to scare the girls, or I'm only going to scare the little kids, or whatever. So, you know, because like I say, you know, some little girls are tough, and some tough guys are little girls.
So. Lee.
Yeah, true.
Are you a little girl, Lee? I'm a little.
I mean, I'm not too bad now, but like when I said that, I mean, when I first went through a scare attraction, which would have been, I don't know, probably very, you know, probably 5-6 years ago. I was absolutely petrified.
We've all been there. We're all veterans now.
But then, within a very short space of time, you sort of realise that A, that they're not going to hurt you, and B, that it's really good fun.
Yes.
And
agreed. You haven't done subspecies though, Lee.
No, I haven't done subspecies.
You haven't met Dimitri.
But you probably do the same.
I have met Dimitri before. Okay. He was dressed as some sort of pig thing with a chainsaw. He was very, very scary. Bless him.
I think he played the same character in subspecies.
He does the same character in Subspecies.
Yeah. Chainsaw. Anyway.
I find myself when I walk through these things now, because I'm watching the acting and I'm watching the directing. And if someone does, because I'm very easy to scare. I mean, the actors in our attractions, you know, they're always trying to scare me when I go through. And it's fantastic when they scare me. And I love it. You know, if I go through and I'm doing a walkthrough and making sure all the actors are okay and, you know, everyone's, you know, fine and happy, and they've all got water or whatever, and just making sure they're okay when I'm doing my rounds. If they get me, it is just such a brilliant moment. It's
well, you got a rather good scare at Warwick a couple of days ago.
I did, yes. I was telling Lee earlier, which was brilliant, which is I went through the Warwick dungeon, because I've been through the London dungeon and the San Francisco dungeon. So I went through the Warwick dungeon, of course, going back to Warwick Castle, and there was a few people who used to work in the Ghost Tower. And in the very final scene of the Warwick dungeon, they tell a story of a witch. I won't ruin it for people who will go and visit there. We won't do spoilers, but the actress who was working in there was Michelle, who first started working with us in the Ghost Town. So I trained her like, 10 years ago or whatever. So that's my very dramatic phone message there.
Perfect timing.
It was, wasn't it? Very Hitchcocky. And I hadn't seen her since 2008 or whatever. And she did this scene, and there was one moment where the lights went out, and I was sat there with my friends, with my friend Katrina and her young daughter and all these people. And the lights came back up and Michelle was an inch away from my nose. And I very loudly.
Did she know it? I mean, did she do that scare for you? Did she know?
Yes.
Okay.
She knew it with me. But she didn't. But she was doing, that was the scare that she was meant to do. So she wasn't doing anything different for me. But it's just that she chose to use me as the person that she was going to do. So for every group who went through that, they would have had the same moment. It's just that she picked me, obviously, because she wanted to get me. So, and she did tell me afterwards, she said it was so hard for her to keep a straight face afterwards. But it was brilliant. But that was just so fantastic that someone I trained scared the living hell out of me. So much so that I, you know, scared myself up. Yes. So that was really nice. And I do have to say, I thought the Warwick Dungeon was the best dungeon out of all the ones that I've seen. I think the quality of the performers and the actors there was brilliant.
What's interesting about the Warwick Dungeon is, unlike London, it doesn't have a ride, it doesn't have a drop ride, there's not a huge amount of projected heads and stuff. It's all about the actors, isn't it? Because it's such a small space.
It is. And, you know, it makes so much difference. But the thing is that the actors, none of the actors sounded like they were bored. None of the actors sounding like they had done it like 60 times a day. And they, you know, you got the feeling that we were the first group and that we were the only people that were getting that information. It was so fresh. And this was like 2:30 in the day. So they'd already been running 2 or 3 hours. You know?
I have to say, I had the funniest line ever in an improvised line, obviously, in the dungeon, the torturer. Obviously, he's meant to have a bit of an attitude, and yeah. One of the persons in our group had crutches, and it's not the easiest attraction to get around with crutches, because you're going up spiral staircases, and the poor chap with crutches was the last person to enter the torture chamber, and the guy, the torturer, yelled at him, "You have 4 legs, you should have been here first." Which I thought was so funny and so clever and so in character and so in the dungeon milieu, that, you know, that is so good. And it's, he didn't have to say that, but it worked so well.
The nice thing about the dungeons and you know, when I've worked in scare attractions and also but particularly the dungeons for the actors there, is that in this world of over, you know, friendly customer service, it's actually quite nice when people can be rude to you.
Mm.
And it's nice as an actor for them to be rude to you as well. You know, it's great therapy because, you know, part of their customer service is actually being horrible. I mean, not rude to the point of, you know, being, you know, personal, but certainly, you know, producing an atmosphere or whatever. And the improvisation side of things there is always good to listen to. Yes.
So just a couple of quick questions to finish off on.
Yes.
Where do you stand on the extreme scare attractions? I think I know from talking to
you. You're all for them, aren't you, Don?
I think they're wonderful. Next question. It's not my area at all. It's not an area that I can really comment on, because it's not something that I don't actually get it. I get it as an extreme resilience test. I don't get it as entertainment. I can't really get my head around it. There's just so much horror, real horror in the world at the moment. I can't get my head. Now, saying that, there is a market for it. It's not our market, and it's not a market that I would go into, but there are people who want to do it, and I know, you know, that they are being successful. I'm quite surprised. I'm quite surprised that you have one, actually, Lee. So is Lee. Yes, I know. I do find that fascinating, because it's strange. I don't really get it. It's not on my radar, and it's not in my area. So
it's very strange, Dominic, now, because I don't really get it either, and it's not some, you know, it's so I think we tried not to hit the areas where we would have thought is we keep away from any sort of sex stuff.
There's
not swearing, and everything is controlled, but in a chaotic manner, if that's the easiest way to explain it, is that...
Yeah.
It's a good name for an attraction, chaotic manner.
Yeah. I have this...
This sounds good.
This is me talking from, you know, not from knowledge, but at a guess, I would think that people who want to work in it would be sadistic, and people who want to go through it are masochistic. So it seems a bit strange to me. It's very strange because it's like because there's certain views on things, like, you know, when they do things where you're going to do this attraction on your own and you're going to do it naked, and which I don't kind of
do that at home.
Well, in the privacy of my own room. But the thing is,
with the curtains open,
the whole thing about being naked is it actually gives the power to the person who's naked. It actually doesn't give power to the scarers, because the kind of people who are going to strip naked are people who are going to be
terrifying naked.
Well, no, they won't be terrified, because they'll just be exhibitionists. So it's one of those things, is that, you know, we did it's a fine publicity stunt, but I don't think it actually works, because what it does is it gives the control to the wrong side. It's like these attractions where they give you torches. There's a brilliant... I love the brilliant thing that they've created now, which is the torches that change, which you control. But I went through an attraction once, and they gave us all torches, and they were little, just handheld flashlight things with a button and on and off. And what happened was...
Thank you for clarifying what a torch is, Dom.
A flashlight.
Yeah.
But people in our group were turning them off and then putting them under their chin. So it actually, it's a great idea, but I don't think it actually works, because the audience are not necessarily going to be pointing the torch in the right place where the monster's going to appear. They're not going to be... You know, there are going to be the idiots in the group who are, you know, going to turn it off and then use it to scare people. And so it's actually, again, it works in reverse, because it gives the audience control. And scare attractions should always be about taking control. I've gone off on a weird tangent again. Sorry, Lee. I did that.
Have you, Nick, you've been to watch, what's the guys that do the interactive punch?
Punch Drunk.
Yeah, that's what I was...
Punch Drunk. Yeah. Ah, yes, I have.
And they seem to, that they've got the sort of, probably the, to me, it would be the sort of like the perfect balance for what I envision that you would like within the industry.
Yeah, almost. It's a little bit too dance heavy. It is very much, the emphasis is on contemporary dance. However, as a device and as an interactive theatrical experience, it is incredible. The only problem is that it's just so complex that you don't really get a through story. So because you can go anywhere you want. So that, again, there's no control of the audience. However, I went to the one in New York called Sleep No More, which is based on Macbeth, and it was an incredible experience. I mean, the set and the costumes and the propping is I've never seen anything at that level.
World class, isn't it?
Oh, it is absolutely world class. I mean, the fact that you can go into, you know, any room you want, you can open any door you want, you can open a drawer in a hotel room and take out a book and look through the book. You can, the propping is incredible. I would like to see them do something that isn't dance. So dance heavy. I wish people would speak to each other. I don't think the audience should speak, because they're not allowed to speak, which works perfectly. But I think the characters should interact more, because they would, you know. They tend to kind of just meet and then dance together. So,
and also they have pre-recorded sound, which I guess,
yes,
everyone has to hear it. But I wish they did more. But you were taken aside, weren't you, Don?
I was abducted. I was abducted by one of the actors. I was standing in this one room. I think it was the tailor's shop or something. And we were watching this actor, and he was doing this kind of magic ritual with salt and herbs and things like that. It was quite fantastic. And suddenly he looked at me, and I bear in mind that everyone, all the audience, myself included, were wearing these masks.
And he suddenly put out his hand to me. And so I put my hand in his hand. And then he pulled me across the street of this, it's an indoor street in this building, dragged me into the Undertaker's, and then turned around, slammed the door in everyone else's face, bolted it, and then dragged me into this back room, and then proceeded to molest me. But it was all part of the show. Yeah. So
you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he didn't leave his number with me. he could have... He gave me this kind of weird charm bracelet and kind of told me...
But he didn't talk to you?
He did talk to me.
Okay, so they do... Yeah, that's interesting how they give it a unique experience. Well, but
only... All he said to me was, don't let this out of your... don't let anyone see it. And he hung this charm around my neck, which I had to keep hidden. Which I thought, if someone saw, they might have reacted to, but they didn't. So I kind of... I think they could have taken it even further by having some sort of... if somebody gets given an object or something and another actor sees that, there should be some sort of interaction with that, which would have been nice to take it even further.
I mean, stemming from that, it's not so much scare, but Shrek's Adventure in London, you and I did, and it kind of has a through storyline of get this, bring it to that a bit like Into the Woods, really.
Yeah.
Get this, give it to that person, give it to that person. I'd like to see that done on a much bigger scale by Punch Drunk, where you are part of a group.
Yes,
and
I agree, yeah. Yeah, I agree, and something with more control. So, because you want the detail of Punch Drunk, but you also want that control that they use in Shrek, or the dungeons, in fact. Mm. And I mean, that's what, these experiences and theatrical experiences and scare mazes all over, and I'm sure in the extreme mazes, control is everything. It's probably an excess of a control in the screen in the extreme mazes, isn't it, Lee? So,
control chaos.
Yeah, it's even more because you're sort of touching areas where you could lose control relatively quite easy. You have to have total control, because if not, then you cause yourself a lot of headaches.
Yes.
So I find that, that doing something like that, you have to have more control over every aspect of everything. Everything's got to be meticulous. Within a scare attraction, as a normal jump scare attraction, that, doesn't need to be down as much as a finer point on the sort of the quality and the throughput that I'm looking at. Maybe it's totally different to obviously the quality and the throughput of what you're doing. But the fact is that that with the extreme stuff, everybody has to work, be like singing off the same hymn sheet, because if not, it does cause lots and lots of problems.
Yeah, I mean absolutely. I'm a believer that scare attractions generally should be like that. I mean, we block them in.
Yes.
We block things so actors can't improvise. They can't, because generally what happens is that an actor does, they do a couple of hours and they do, the scare or whatever. And, if the actor is not thinking, they suddenly go, oh, well, I've done that scare. I'm going to change it this time. I'm going to come from this area. I'm going to do this. And that's when the dangers happen. So, when you get a really good actor, a good actor can be in one position and can be doing the same scare every 30 seconds for 8 hours, and they never get bored, and they do, and it's fantastic, and they get a great reaction, because, it only works when everyone's... But, yeah, I do agree. I mean, I think it's interesting with the extreme stuff, because I realize that they obviously have to be very tightly... controlled, it's only the idea of these extreme things. I can't help feeling that they're just like, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here for the general public.
Well, I asked.
But that's an awful thing to say,
but, which is true. In theory, that's how would I, in most of the time, that's how you would it would explain it so easily, how you've explained it. But the fact is that it's like anything, is that, that a lot used magic and sleight of hand, which is something that we all use. And so, you know, we're not doing, when you sort of like get down to the nitty gritty, it's not massively different. Yeah. It's just, in another way, it is massively different, but you know, we still have to use exactly the same stuff.
Yes.
It's just that we use it slightly different, we'll have a chat off air and I'll explain more to you.
I mean, what's nice, Dom, is talking to you is very refreshing to hear that there are companies that appreciate the acting so much, because especially stateside, you see so many attractions that are, you know, they just go to a scare con and they'll just buy the latest animatronic wolf that jumps out at you, and you think, well, that's not, you know, that's not really
theatre. The thing with those things is that they're great, but they're designed for Halloween. Mm. So, you know, I mean, we do year-round attractions, so that's why we don't buy those props and from Halloween things as such. We do buy a few things that we use in our Halloween shows, but they're only designed to last a couple of months, and they tend to break. And then you see a big company will go, oh, we know how to scare people, and we're going to go buy loads of things from Halloween World or whatever, and they buy all these props, and then, you know, after a month, it's like, oh no, it's broken down. Oh, the actor's going to have to do something. And it's there's a lot of, the problem is this is my personal belief, is that I'm such a big believer in training the actors, and I don't think there's any substitute for direction and training the actors. And I very rarely go through attractions and I feel the actors are trained or treated like actors. And even places where we've kind of worked and done troubleshooting, you know, you'll kind of go back another year and it'll just be a bit terrible, really. There's just no discipline. And I've heard of situations where actors are working in attractions that, that people are running, and they'll be called, oh, you're operators, you're not actors, you're just, and I think that drives me out of the wall, because they are actors, they are performers, and they're acting. And,
well, they're out of work actors.
Well, I that's the one thing I hate. I mean, we always employ professional actors. We try to get people who've trained, and we treat them with, you know, respect. We've had a lot of, like I said, we've had a lot of actors who've come through our place who are now big TV stars and Hollywood and blah blah blah, and you know, a lot of them, it's a discipline, and people poo-poo it as not real performance, and it really is. You know, if you said to a lot of actors, okay, you're going to go on stage, the play is now not 2 hours with an interval, it is now an 8-hour play, we're going to give you 20 minutes, probably 4 hours in, for a rest, but you've only got one line, and you've only got one scene, but you're repeating it every 30 seconds. Mm. You know, to actually do that,
and have an audience of 20,000.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, to explain, to get an actor to do that, and also give the same performance at the end of the day with the same energy as they gave at the beginning of the day, and in fact at the end of a run and the beginning of a run. You know, every single person who comes through that attraction has paid their money. They all deserve to have the best performance, and there should be no difference if the actor is. And you know, and I went through one in Halloween last year, and I was being touched. Actors were pushing past me. They were screaming in my ear, and I said to someone who I knew, with the director, and I said, "Did you know that was happening?" And he went, "Oh well, it's the last night." Mm-hmm. And I thought that's. And that really annoyed me, because I was like, that's no excuse. That really is no excuse. You know, it's there is no excuse for, and you know, it's that shows, but that these companies, they will get very excited and they'll talk about how wonderful the set costume looks and how wonderful the costumes look, but then they'll kind of almost slag off the audience, and they're, oh, the audience are stupid, or they found a dead end and they couldn't get out of it. And you're like, well, actually, that's your fault. It's not the audience's fault. It's your fault for building a bad attraction. And or they'll, you know, they'll
they won't take care, as much care, even, dare I say it, with a lot of some of the big players in America. A lot of the times I've seen things and it's, the attractions look fantastic. They look amazing. But the actors are awful. And they're not doing anything because they have not been directed. And it doesn't matter if you build a fantastic attraction. I mean, you can put the hot dog seller in it and it'll be scary and some people will scream, but he'll still be a hot dog seller. Whereas if you train him, he's going to be a scare actor and he'll do a, you know, and he'll know and understand it and understand the psychology and the blocking of it. And it's a shame because I think there's a lot of people who they think creating these attractions ends with the scenic and the costumes. Mm. And they don't realize it actually, if it's not for the actors, then the attractions really can be very lame.
And it's interesting, that's a lesson you sort of learned at Ghosts at Warwick, wasn't it? Just, you had a smoke machine and a CD player, and everything else was actor-based, and that's why it was so brilliant.
Well, it was also scripted, and every single scare happened in exactly the same place every single time. There was no room for actor interpretation. It was, the thing was absolutely scripted. It was a scary play, and it was 6 minutes long. And I did 44,000 performances, we worked out.
Wow.
Which, like Linton says, apart from 330 to 56, which was a really awful performance, and I dried, all the others were perfect. So... But I had a ball there. I mean, you know, it was like you said, Nick, it was an amazing show, and everyone who was part of it still talks about it so fondly, and they remember it, and they had so many fond memories of.
You've even done more performances than Les Mis, Dom.
I have. I've done more performances. Yeah, we actually did that. We worked out in kind of like equivalent doggy years, I think. So.
So, what's to the future for Dominic McChesney and obviously Sudden Impact Entertainment as well?
Well, we've currently, because we've got the rights, obviously, we're developing, hopefully, Ghostbusters to go somewhere else. And we've also...
Has good music.
Which has very good music. Yeah, very good music. It's by that same composer chap who did Alton Towers, I think. He's not bad.
It's not great, but it's not bad.
Actually, I have to say, I have to say, the music that Nick wrote for Ghostbusters is spectacular. He just did the most amazing music for it. I mean, we worked for a couple of months on it, didn't we, really? And you did 20, how many, 27 different?
Oh, something stupid like that, yeah, 28 drafts.
28 drafts before I finally was happy. But it was fantastic working with Nick, and you know he understands and what people want and need, and he takes direction brilliantly, and you know he becomes passionate about a project. So I mean, I sound like I'm selling him in here, but if anybody's out there and you want a very good composer for your attractions, I can wholeheartedly recommend Mr. Nick Hudson.
But it was the humour of the Muzak which really I was happy with, ultimately.
Well, that was something you came up with on your own, wasn't it, completely? Because I said, oh, we've got this office, because we have this office as you enter the attraction. The first room is this office. And Nick came up with, oh, well, why don't you have Muzak playing in the background? So we've got this wonderful Muzak, Ghostbusters Muzak, which plays in the office. And it's hysterical. It's brilliant. I love it. I never get sick of it, even though it's on a loop. But all the music that he created for Ghostbusters was incredible. It was really, really incredible. But we're working on for the future. We've got Halloween in Malaysia again this year. So we're working on that. We're hoping Ghostbusters will go somewhere. And we've also got the rights, which we're in development for, but we've also got the rights for Sharknado. So we're going to be creating an interactive attraction, scare attraction, comedy scare attraction based on the wonderful B-movie brand Sharknado. So that should be very, very funny. And a lot of good
or
fun.
Or Finny.
Finny. Well, Finn is the main character. Is oh, it? Finny, as in funny.
Yes.
Oh, that was very good. That's very funny.
Or Finny.
That's good. Usually Linton thinks of jokes like that. So, yes, so Sharknado is the new one that we're kind of preparing at the moment, plus the new ones for the Malaysia Knights of Fight. So that's it, really. Yes.
And if anybody wants to get in touch with you, I think you are on Facebook. Are you on Twitter as well?
I am on Twitter. I don't often go on Twitter, but I am on Twitter. And also, which would be Dom McChesney, which is McChesney. And they can also email me at dom@suddenimpactentertainment.com if they want to know any more. I'm not sure they would want to.
No. Well, thank you very much, Dom, for coming on the show anyway.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. Enjoyed, and I'm very honoured that you asked me to waffle on for a couple of hours.
I just really enjoyed it. And I hope you've enjoyed your first Frequent Fear podcast, Nick, too.
I have. It's been an absolute pleasure, Lee. Thank you very much, and I look forward to doing many more.
Oh, definitely.
Frequent Fear.
If anybody wants to get in touch with us at Frequent Fear, they'll get us on Facebook at facebook.com/frequentfear. We're on Twitter @frequentfear. Or you can email us at info@frequentfear.co.uk. You can generally get us on everywhere. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a review and a ratings if you can. And don't forget to go to nightmarishcountries.com to support our partners over there too.
But anyways, thank you so much, Dom. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Lee. Thank you, Nick.
This show is part of the Haunted Attractions Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at hauntedattractionspodcast.com.